I can't tell you how many people are sending me emails in FastBlast now about hearing these huge sounds on their roof, like our other caller was last hour. I mean, here's just an example from Neil. He says, George, the sound on the roof, that's incredible. I awoke at 4:30 in the morning a week or so ago, the same kind of noise. It was so loud I had to go outside and check. No one else was out. I thought I was dreaming. Now, that's bizarre. That's from Danny out there in Redwood, California, Redwood City, California. Well, in a moment, we're going to take a trip down the rabbit hole to a very wild and mysterious place where science and the supernatural converge. Stand by. Marie Jones, our guest. Science on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Marie Jones has been involved with the paranormal one way or another for most of her life, which led to a fascination with quantum physics and the writing of her new book, Science. I'll tell you about that because it's spelled a little differently. How new discoveries in quantum physics and new science may explain the existence of paranormal phenomena. Marie is also a New Thought metaphysics minister and spiritual counselor. She holds a master's degree in metaphysical studies, and she has studied Wicca, goddess traditions, mythology, and comparative religion. She's worked as a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network in L.A. and San Diego in the 80s and the 90s. She's our first-time guest on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, Marie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I like the way you have used the word psi and science.
Isn't that clever?
Put them together. Very good. So clever, I'm going to have you spell the title of your book to everybody.
It's P-S-I-E-N-C-E. And it is pronounced science, not P-science or P-science. Although science. I've heard it pronounced those ways, too, and that's perfectly fine.
Well, interesting. How'd you get involved in this field?
You know, from childhood, I've always been interested in the paranormal. It seemed like it was a natural part of my life because I was an incredibly imaginative kid, or kind of a weird kid. But I was also very much involved with science. My father is a geophysicist. So it seems like I was surrounded by these two different worlds, and yet I had the opportunity to always find ways that they seemed to converge. And as time went on and I did more research and reading and you know, met a lot of people in both worlds, I kept finding connections between the two. And I thought, you know, I really want to look into this and write a book about it and kind of throw it out there and see what sticks. And that's what I did.
Isn't it interesting how people of like traits when they're kids tend to migrate to each other, albeit you and me now in this show, but I find this happening all the time, Marie.
Oh, absolutely.
And you talk to a number of kids with similar likes as their adults, they were all that way.
Yes, absolutely. You know, what's really weird is that I kind of veered away from the science angle for a long time. And yet, the more I got into quantum physics and learning about even, you know, theoretical physics and how it applied to the paranormal, it brought me back around to the love I had of all kinds of science as a child.
I did both simultaneously, the science in one direction, the paranormal in another, as a kid and then as an adult, but didn't really merge the two together until much later on in my life.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like you have to go on these two separate paths to find out that they're bringing you back to the same spot.
Yeah, they just come at it in a different direction.
It does. I kind of like to describe it as, you know, life is sort of a yardstick, and paranormal is at one end, and then you've got hard science at the other, but they're both part of the same yardstick. And throughout my life, I've traveled up and down that yardstick and then come to realize, wow, you know, it's all a part of the one whole stick.
It's like my favorite poem by Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Tell me a little bit about science. What does that mean?
Basically, it's a real clever way of saying that this book is about the science behind the paranormal. You know, I am a firm believer that science can explain everything. However, our modern science has not quite caught up to those explanations, but the potential is there because to me, science is just simply the structure of something, an event or you know, matter, energy, whatever. It describes the structure. And everything has a structure. Everything has a way that it works. And we just need to catch up to those explanations.
Everything has order.
Exactly.
Everything has purpose. They're all pieces of the puzzle in the universe.
Exactly. I love that, you know, the idea of a jigsaw puzzle. You know, and every piece connects with every other piece. And you can't really make the whole bigger picture if one piece is missing.
Well, and as these pieces are scattered all over the place, you don't see the bigger picture.
Exactly.
Until they start coming together.
Exactly.
Quantum physics, your definition.
It is the science of the very, 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 very small. And it just tells us the behavior of energy and matter at the quantum level, at the most basic fundamental level. And what's really neat about it is that it behaves in a paranormal fashion. And we look at things that go on in quantum mechanics, and we say to ourselves, this is much more bizarre, well, to me it is, than a lot of the paranormal phenomena that I read about.
Well, we call it paranormal. We call it supernatural. But
right.
Is it really? Isn't it maybe very normal?
It's just misunderstood, I think.
I do, too.
Yeah, it's normal, and we just haven't wrapped our brains around it yet.
Well, you've got the kind of background that's going to be fascinating tonight to expand our discussion with you tonight, Marie, especially your background in studying Wicca, because I want you to help some people get through the difference between what they have thought Wiccans were, and that is Satanists, which is absolutely, absolutely false.
Yes.
And we'll point that out. We'll get into that a little bit later
on.
Okay,
sounds good to me. Needs to be cleared up.
Absolutely. The cross between what you've studied, you know, mm-hmm. exploring the theories of multiple universes and hidden dimensions tied into quantum physics is fascinating. Did that come easy for you, or was it difficult to tie the two together?
You know, it was almost too easy, where I was constantly, because I'm not a scientist, and I don't play one on TV, to quote an old baby boomer quote, it came too easy. And what I had to do is I had to keep asking myself, am I reading something into this because I want to? And a lot of what I write about is definitely speculation. I mean, I'm honest about that. But I'm also presenting a lot of research that is very upfront and very simple. And those connections were there. But I had to keep kind of going over things to make sure that I wasn't finding a connection because I wanted to. I wanted to make sure that the connections had some validity outside of my personal opinion. So there was a lot of difficulty in putting this all together.
What's fascinating is almost every Coast to Coast guest has written a line or two about your book. Joshua Warren, Jim Mars, Nick Redfern, Jeff Ballinger. Everybody's done it.
Those
amazing
guys, I have to tell you, they are the most awesome, generous, amazing people. And,
yes, they are.
And I thank them all. And they're just wonderful. The open-mindedness, you know, just giving me whatever I needed, sharing information with me. It was really awesome. These are great guys.
Let's break down some of the subject matter by the various types of paranormal episodes, starting, of course, first with UFOs and the search for intelligent life, as you do in your first chapter.
Right.
Let's tie this in now to the quantum physics that might be out there. Do you believe that UFOs are physical, coming from other planets, or are they dimensional, like Jacques Vallée has always said?
Mm-hmm.
He believes that they could be messengers of deception, as he writes.
Right.
What do you think that they may be?
I'm going to choose all of the above. I really, truly believe that we are seeing a little bit of everything. I think that we're seeing the common misidentification of, you know, everyday aircraft, military prototypes that people are just not familiar with. I also do believe that it is entirely possible and probable that we're being visited by, you know, highly intelligent civilizations from either elsewhere in our universe, a parallel universe or two or three or four, or another dimension. And I also believe that there is another metaphysical element to UFO sightings, where our consciousness is involved in manifesting the experiences of some people. And I seem to, you know, find cases that sort of apply to each of those descriptions, and I guess I'm not alone in thinking that.
Well, you know, you're not alone in thinking that,
yeah.
And it could very well be all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I'll take it a step further, too, is I think we were seeded. I think we were jump-started. Does not mean I don't believe in the divine creator, because I believe that entirely.
Right.
But I do believe a lot of the episodes on this planet and the stories that we've read about in Texas and biblical interpretations
mm-hmm.
were some kind of visitations from extraterrestrials or angels. Something jump-started us on this planet.
Right. Oh, I think so, too. And, you know, we talk about how comets and meteors have carried the very basic fundamental, you know, beginnings of life here. So in a way, even science is telling us that we're extraterrestrial in origin. But, you know, when you look at some of these amazing ancient civilizations that had this unbelievable level of scientific knowledge, well, where did it come from? I mean, it's taken us quite a while to get to a certain point in our progress of our understanding of the world around us. Yet, you know, the Sumerians and the Mayans, they had these amazing scientific abilities to understand this, the cosmos, and even medicine and just the world around them.
Though I'm not looking forward to being 6 years older in 2012, I am looking forward to getting to that December 21st date.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I, you know, I'm really excited about it because I'm one of the people that believes it's not going to be the end of anything. It's just going to be it's going to be a change.
I believe that, too.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really a time of enlightenment for us. I think as we evolve into that year, I think things are going to be extremely positive for this planet.
I do, too. And what's really exciting is when I talk to just friends of mine, because, you know, you tend to hang out with people that are similar in mindset to you, and a lot of my friends are excited about it, too. And what I see happening is that the collective consciousness of humanity is going to create this shift. And, you know, there are those people that believe that we're all going to die and burn in hell, and that's going to be the end of that. But I think that they're being outnumbered by those of us that feel like there's going to be some kind of a leap in our consciousness as well as in technology and our understanding of the world around us.
As you wrote the book Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, what fascinated you the most? Was there any one thing?
You know, I started out totally fascinated. What really triggered me to write the book was reading Lynn McTaggart's book called The Field, The Quest for the Secret Force.
She's been a guest, too.
I got to give her a shout-out because that book made my toes tingle. Because to me, what she was describing...
And it doesn't take much to make your toes tingle.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know? But I just thought she sort of really, you know, what the zero-point field to me represented was the absolute unification of a spiritual concept, of a force from which all other forces are created, and the scientific concept of this ground state of energy that's self-regenerating. That really is what got me going. But I got to tell you that as I was researching and writing this, the thing that fascinated me the most was one of the most basic fundamental laws in quantum physics, and that's, you know, non-locality. Just the fact that particles can communicate with each other over vast distances instantaneously. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a very fundamental concept that most people overlook. And yet, when you think about that, you know, life is a connected web, and every particle can communicate with every other particle, and you know, you start kind of snowballing with the potentiality of what that means.
Well, you know, and I call it the wireless internet in the universe.
It is. It absolutely is. I mean,
once you learn how to connect, you can do incredible things with it.
Yeah, and I think once everybody realizes that we can do that, maybe everybody will stop treating each other so badly. Because in a sense, what you do to somebody else, you're doing to yourself. You know, you hurt the planet, you're hurting your own web. So I, you know, would love to see that kind of a shift be a part of what occurs in 2012, that people realize, wow, you know, we're connected on this web called life.
I can't understand, you know, when we talk about UFOs and visitation, whether it's planetary, dimensional, mm-hmm. or some other universe, what they want. You know, we've had experts. I had David Jacobs on for a couple hours Friday. He thinks there's an agenda here. Something's going on. Jim Mars believes there's something going on. Jim Mars, of course, writing for your book here.
I love Jim.
If there is indeed something going on and these individuals are right, what do you think it might be?
You know, it seems like we've heard, you know, we hear of sightings where they just seem to be want to, you know, checking us out. They're just watching us, hanging around the hood, seeing how we behave and what we act like. And then, of course, you know, they interact with us, they abduct, they do this, they do that, negative and positive. If they, here's my way of thinking. If they are not that far advanced from us, I believe that they want to either take something from us that we have that they would like, or they want to work with us. But my thought is, if they are really advanced, wouldn't we bore them to tears?
I would think so. See, Jacob scared the heck out of me when he said the agenda is that one day all these hybrids that they're creating during alien abductions mm-hmm. are going to be turned on, basically, to do whatever their task is supposed to be, whether it's a revolt, overthrow, who knows what. But he thinks that's what's happening, and they're creating these hybrids for
creepy.
This purpose. Yeah, it
I like
is
to think positive, but, you know, I'm the kind of, I like to listen to everything everybody has to say, and I tend to... I believe everything, but then I want you to prove it to me. That's my attitude towards life.
Well, was there anything specific that got you to think about the connections between the paranormal and the quantum world?
Well, with UFOs, you know, you read about different types of sightings. You might read about somebody who sees a UFO or what they think is a UFO, and they observe it for a little while, and then the thing just shoots off into space, and they can see it getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and then finally it's, you know, out of their line of vision. But what really got me interested was, of course, Jacques Vallée's work and, you know, the talk about interdimensionality. The sightings where people would report seeing a UFO that just sort of blinked into their field of vision, you know, did a little movement and then blinked out again.
And
my question is, okay, where did it come from? Where did it go back to? And reading more and more about those types of cases, and also a lot of people referring to it as, oh, it seemed to be like a projection. And then, you know, when I'm reading about the holographic universe theory, which states that our entire reality may be nothing more than a projection from a higher dimension onto our 3D reality, and I'm thinking, well, okay, if you know, maybe UFOs, or some of them at least, are projections. But then again, it begs the question, where are they being projected from?
What
Who's
about
doing
a wormhole?
The projecting?
But is it possible there's a wormhole involved here?
I think the wormholes can come into play when you're talking about how can they get here. I think if a UFO is coming from another dimension, there might be some different elements. Getting from one dimension to another, it may involve something like a wormhole. Because we know so little about extra dimensions beyond our three dimensions of space and one of time, wormholes seem to apply more to the possibility that they're coming from another point in our universe or a parallel universe. And, you know, there's a theory called the bubble universe theory that we are one of many bubbles that are created out of the sort of quantum sea. And universes are constantly bubbling up and popping out and, you know, coming in and out of existence. And that between the bubbles, there are these wormholes that connect one to the other. And so that would you know, give me an explanation that I would be happy with, that UFOs can get from universe A to universe B, or from one point in our universe to another point, but also one point in time. Because if time is a landscape, as theoretical physicists like to tell us, and past, present, and future all exist at the same time, you know, maybe they found a way to kind of bend that landscape.
We're talking with Marie Jones. Her website is mariedjones.com, D with just the letter. Her book, Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E, if you're looking on Amazon or in the bookstores. We'll be back with her in just a moment as we talk about ghosts and poltergeists and those things that go bump in the night on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, with our guest Marie Jones, we'll be back with Marie in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the existence of paranormal phenomena. And welcome back to Coast. I'm Marie Jones. I'm out of the cave here in St. Louis for the holidays before I whisk back to Los Angeles. Marie, you're in where? South Dakota now, aren't you?
San Diego.
Oh, you're in San Diego.
Beautiful, sunny San Diego.
Ah, see, they just put a little SD next to your name on my screen. Sandy. I was just there on Saturday.
Yeah, I know that. I heard about that, and I didn't know, and I wish I would have known.
A wonderful time. People of San Diego, absolutely superb. You know what? This is a great country with great people.
Oh, it is.
And you know what? All we need to do is elect some great politicians, and then we'll have a great, great government.
Sounds good to me.
If they're out there. Anyway, ghosts, poltergeists, how do you tie them in to quantum physics?
Well, you know, that was one of the easier things for me because, you know, if we think of ghosts as trapped energy and they seem to act like, you know, energy that can't quite find its way to the light or whatever you want to say. And we look at the fact that energy can kind of cohere and sync up in certain ways, and that coherence can manifest it, you know, as visible as a ghost or a poltergeist. And one of the things that I found was that using the zero-point field, because it's a random ambient field of energy, when you look at the vibrational patterns of energy, every now and then something will vibrate in a similar fashion to something else, and that creates a different type of energy. We know from the law of conservation of energy that energy never dies. It doesn't cease to exist. It simply changes into another form of energy. So ghosts could be leftover energy from the dearly departed that has not quite dissipated or gone off to wherever else it needs to go, and it's found a way to pattern the ambient zero-point energy, to sort of synchronize with it by vibrating in a similar fashion. And through that similar vibration, it appears to us as a ghost. And that would explain why ghosts rarely stick around for long. I mean, it's a very erratic type of energy. It's not something that you can capture on film for any length of time. You can't really get it to happen when you want to. But one of the other things I found is that it's very similar to, like, television and radio waves. If you go look outside and you look up in the sky, you don't see the television and radio waves that are going through the air. But if you were able to tune yourself into those frequencies, you could pick up Survivor, American Idol, Coast to Coast, you know, on your own inner antenna.
You could also probably, if you had a big enough antenna, pick up Edward R. Murrow, the original War of the Worlds,
right,
and everything else in between.
And what was it, Hitler at the first the Olympic Games? Or
the Olympic Games in Munich?
Right, there you go, just like in that movie Contact. So it's a matter of, you know, how can energy possibly manifest itself differently? Well, it can if it's vibrating at just the right frequency where it becomes a part of our visible spectrum.
Well, why are some ghosts haunting then? I mean, where does the personality then of this entity come in?
You know,
if it was just pure energy, you would think, okay, you would see it. It would be there. But, I mean, some people have been scared to death, Marie.
Oh, I don't want to have anything to do with ghosts. They terrify me. To me, that's the ultimate invasion of your privacy.
You mean if your dearly departed great aunt grandfather showed up at the foot of your bed, would that scare the heck out of you?
Yes. I don't care if it's a loved one. It's like, you know, let me know you're coming so I can mentally prepare for this.
So you'd say, like, get out of here.
I'm not seeing you. Well, I think that, you know, there's obviously something connected to human emotion because most ghosts, and I, you know, haven't studied every case out there, but most hauntings seem to involve a traumatic, violent, or negative type of death rather than, I mean, rarely do we see ghosts of people who died, you know, I had a great life and I was so filled with joy. It seems like they want to just move on. So there seems to be a connection between the emotion and the energy and the manifestation of it.
And the negativity about it.
Yeah, negativity.
The negative ghosts or the negative lives tend to hang around more.
Yeah, and there could be, you know, maybe a negative vibrational frequency that is associated with that. Whereas, you know, people who die who have lived well and really have no need to hold on to this life, they don't vibrate on that same frequency. You know, they're vibrating way up here and they're moving on.
Well, with the science of ghosts, I think you agree it's a natural occurrence. It's part of this universe. There's nothing strange about it.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm not one of those people who could ever believe that when we die, that's it. And knowing what I know about, you know, the law of conservation of energy, well, the energy that we are becomes a different type of energy. It doesn't cease to exist.
Well, if energy lasts forever, and then you have an entity like a ghost, can you then assume that your soul lasts forever?
I like to believe that it does. I mean, you know, that's getting into some metaphysical ground, but I can't imagine if energy doesn't cease to exist and if it changes form that our consciousness just snaps out, you know, and everything goes black. And I tend to associate the soul with our conscious awareness, a higher level of consciousness than the one we live with on a day-to-day level.
Do you think ghost hunters, well, I know Joshua Warren does for sure. As a matter of fact, I was just with him a few weeks ago, and he demonstrated to me firsthand his paranormal computer. They call it the paranormal PC.
Oh, how cool.
It's a brand new computer that is supposed to record ghosts and other entities. It's incredible.
That would be great to see.
He brought it for a test on the haunted Queen Mary.
Uh-huh.
And as he turned his machine on in this very spooky area where some people had died that was supposed to be haunted, his high-powered paranormal PC goes,
oh,
and the batteries
funny.
Die. The batteries just get drained.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
He brought it to a sci-fi taping we were doing, and it's an incredible apparatus, which leads this question. Technology can capture some of these energy-related fields.
Right.
And if, you know, and I think that's how they do it. A ghost is energy, pure
exactly.
And simple.
We're the ones who are a little behind, and it sounds like Joshua's at the cutting edge of developing the type of, you know, technology that we need to apply a more scientific method to ghost hunting. And the more that that's done, the more commonplace that subject matter is, and the more acceptable to the scientific community it'll become. Because I think that's the biggest beef of scientists, is that if you can't apply the scientific method of duplicating the phenomena, if you can't, you know, make it happen in a lab, if you can't get it on film, if it can't, you know, be broken down into some kind of observable thing that you can study, then it doesn't exist.
Joshua does a great job. He's not a scientist. Why doesn't science get involved in things like this?
I have a feeling that there are more scientists out there interested in it than we think, but they just are so... they're suppressed doing their own science. Imagine if they came out and said, gee, you know, I'm really interested in this phenomena of poltergeist, and I'd like to do some research on it. I need to get some funding.
Well, you think they're afraid of ridicule?
Well, not necessarily ridicule, but I think that there's such a status quo. My dad's a geophysicist. He's retired now. So now he can say and do whatever he wants, and believe me, he is. And he's telling me all these stories about how when he was, you know, part of the establishment, that, you have to play a certain game in order to get your papers published and to get the funding you need for research. But there are mavericks out there, and they're always breaking the rules a little bit and kind of opening the landscape a little bit more.
I think that would be a heck of a research project.
I do, too.
You know, here's grant money to ascertain whether life after death exists. What a great study.
Exactly. I have a really sneaking suspicion that there would be a lot of protests from the religious community, too, though. Because when you're dealing with stuff like this, you know, we've got, I hate to say this, but we've got some religious fundamentalist mentality in this country as well as in other countries that may not want the truth to come out about these types of phenomena because it might go against everything that they're teaching.
It could shatter it. And shadow it.
Oh, yeah. Shatter and shadow.
Tell me, in terms of the ghost end, as you were doing your work and research, any one story pop up that you liked?
Oh, you know, I've read a lot of different ghost sightings, and a lot of times they all kind of sound the same, just the names and places have been changed to protect the innocent. But there was a really neat case that I wrote about in the book in Scotland. I think it was back in 1995 at a cemetery where people who were reporting a ghost of a man who had been executed. And this ghost or this entity was actually getting physical with people, beating them up and giving them bruises and punching them. And
trying to kill them or just beat them up?
Just, you know, bruising them up a bit. And a lot of homeless people apparently used this cemetery to sleep in. And they were reporting, you know, coming out with black eyes and bruises. I thought that was kind of a funny story.
Well, maybe this entity didn't want the homeless sleeping on his grave or something.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, either that or he was just a real bad seed in life and in death.
I will always remember a piece of video I saw a couple of years ago where this was at night, and a tow truck was bringing in a vehicle involved in a fatal car accident.
Mm-hmm.
But the vehicle was being towed into this salvage yard. And so on this grainy piece of videotape at night, you can see the tow truck coming in and he drops the car off. And then later on, you see what looks like a true ghost in human form walking around the car.
Wow.
And someone died in that car.
Right.
In the accident. I think it was that person.
Yeah, he's probably going, where am I? Did I die? You know, what do I do now? I'm not ready to go.
Okay, but that brings up something interesting. If we agree that ghosts are pure energy, where does the energy of the family member ghosts come from, the helpers come from, where they basically take that lost entity that's walking around the car and brings them into the light? How does that happen? Because it's almost as if it has a thought pattern all to itself.
Right. You know, to me, we could apply the idea of you know, alternate dimensions here. Perhaps when we die, we go to another dimension of reality. But if you have a traumatic death, if you're not done in this level, you know, your energy kind of gets caught between two worlds. And, you know, maybe on the other side where we're supposed to be going, that's where the helpers are, and they're able to come through. You know, their energy is able to transcend that portal between dimensions and come and get you and take you back. You know, come on, we got to go over here, buddy.
Well, now, how do you explain hell?
I don't believe it. I think hell is here. I don't believe that there's a hell anywhere other than right here on Earth.
Do you think maybe, though, it might be a different plane of these levels that we've talked about?
Absolutely. I think it's probably a level of consciousness where you have absolutely no compassion.
And you don't want to be there.
Yeah. It. You know, I've just never been someone who believed in this idea of heaven and hell. You know, to me, those are mythological symbols that were created for a particular religion.
Maybe to scare people? Keep them in line.
Well, you got to keep them obedient. What better way than to tell them, you know, you get out of line, you're going to go straight to hell. I mean, it worked on us when we were kids, you know.
Well, hey, you know, you're absolutely right there. Okay, how do you tie in quantum physics with the Bermuda Triangle?
That was, you know, when I first started looking into the Bermuda Triangle, I automatically thought about wormholes. I thought, well, you know, and I'd heard this before from other people that if there are wormholes, and we don't know that there are, you know, I want to say straight out, wormholes have not been proven to exist. They are just a theory. But, you know, then I thought, well, if they do exist, let's go ahead and take that one step further. If there are shortcuts between the space-time continuum, could there also be shortcuts here on our planet that can connect us from, you know, one part of the planet to another, one part of our planet to a point in the universe? And with a place like the Bermuda Triangle, what's interesting is it doesn't, you know, the effects that we read about, things disappearing, you know, the electromagnetic chaos that occurs to computer systems and the way people feel that have come back and reported a sort of an altered state of consciousness, missing time, feeling very, you know, vertigo and feeling very out of sorts. Well, why doesn't that happen to everybody who goes through the Bermuda Triangle? I mean, obviously, thousands of people cross there, you know, every year, and they come out okay, and nothing happens. And so then I started thinking about the possibility that these wormholes are not, they can be stationary in that they're operating in one place, but they're not always consistent. So if the Bermuda Triangle is a wormhole of sorts, an earthbound wormhole,
which is possible.
Right, but it's not a consistent phenomena. It doesn't always, the
it could be pulsating, you know, where it opens and closes
exactly
at some kind of lengthy predetermined
right
time.
And perhaps it needs a certain type of, you know, climatological conditions to occur, that the waves have to be just right, the water temperature has to be just right, or something that's going on below the surface of the ocean. You know, there's methane gas bubbles that's one theory.
Well,
for some
that
of the
is one theory, and it could be part of
exactly
what is happening.
Exactly. There could be a whole string of things that have to be in place for that phenomena to occur.
Producer Tom, the person who called you to get you on the line here for the program, wanted to go to Bermuda on a vacation. And I was just kidding with him. I said, well, you know, that is part of the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, really.
And he said, what do you mean? And I said, Tom, Bermuda Triangle, Bermuda. And now he doesn't want to go. He's scared.
Well, tell him he could take the long, long, long way around and just sort of circumvent the whole thing.
I think the great story with the Navy jets years ago that disappeared.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, that's a classic, Flight 19. It's just such a classic. And, you know, I love all these shows that came out a year or so ago on Sci-Fi Channel and Discover where they went looking for the planes. And they found all these other planes, but they didn't find those five.
Can you imagine if we were to drain the ocean for just a day?
Oh, my gosh.
What's down there on the ocean floor?
Yeah, I mean,
on this entire planet. Just drain it for a day.
It's the final frontier, not including space.
And if everything was preserved, I don't know if it would be, but if you could find that, you'd find ships that were ages and ages
old. Oh, I'm sure there's just an incredible amount of stuff down there.
You definitely would find Atlantis one way or another.
Yeah, that would definitely settle the argument over where Atlantis is.
You talk about psychic abilities connected to the quantum world. How so?
That's the easiest thing that I saw connections with.
By the way, you're so right on. I just wanted you to know that.
Oh, thank you. I do try. I mean, you know, when I wrote the book, what I really wanted to do was get all the information together that I could find and kind of put it out there with the hope that people would read it and pick up on it and, you know, do their own research and their own thinking. But, you know, what the neat thing about psi and ESP and remote viewing, the stuff that involves our mind actually seems to have the most connections to the quantum world because of some of the most basic, laws of quantum physics, non-locality and entanglement, wave-particle duality, the idea that particles are really not particles. They're actually both particle and wave until we observe them. And we collapse the wave function, and they become a fixed particle. And all of this stuff had me thinking, you know, it makes sense that if particles can communicate over these distances, why can't we? I mean, we're made up of particles.
Yes, we are. We'll be back with more. We're going to continue the dialogue a little bit later on this hour. We're going to talk about the Wiccans. And then in the final hour, phone calls from you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.